Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Oh, hit at 239 with 8 home runs and 30 runs batted in. Well hit fly ball deep to right field. Forget it, it's going to go. There it goes. Home run.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Wife in. Hey, 406. McMonagle here with you on this Monday morning. Reaction Monday, and we got plenty to react to. We opened the show with the football as the Giants with an excellent performance on the road in Seattle. Quarterback coach. The coach off the half bye or whatever. A lot of extra time from the Thursday night loss to the Cowboys, and it looked like it with a plan and an offense that bounced back from a long first drive and a turnover and a 14-point swing at the goal line and bounced right back and took it to Seattle. And they got after the quarterback. I believe it was 9 sacks. They now lead the NFL in sacks. Daniel Jones looked terrific. The offensive game plan was good. They make a great play at the end of the game on special teams with a blocked field goal from Simmons. And that is an impressive victory for the New York Giants. The New York Jets were awful. I've talked about, Robert Saleh, yes, he's a problem, but it's the offense. And maybe it's a problem that I don't view Robert Saleh as significant in the offense. And we could talk about whether or not that dynamic shouldn't be or should change for this team, or that's not a winning formula, whatever the case may be. It's Hackett, it's Rodgers, and this offense looks pitiful. Robert Saleh's defense played well enough to win the game. Aaron Rodgers looked old, tired, and not only that, was he missing throws? Yeah, not only that, again, even trying to force feed Wilson, it still felt like they're not on the same page in so much of the game. So many times, Rodgers is looking for the back shoulder throw there. Like, how many times we hear it? They're not on the same page. He's making bad throws, yes. Yes, he threw a pick six, yes. At the end of the game, still with an opportunity, throwing for the tie. Underthrew a ball and had an interception. But so much of it, guys, Breece Hall, the inability to run the football. It just, the offense looks so bad and so disjointed. Things I thought I could see from Aaron Rodgers, looking old, sure. Getting beat up, which he's getting killed. I mean, that's really the most significant thing, is he's going to be unable to finish the season if they continue to get like this. But I could see him having some bad throws here or there. I could see him not looking like vintage Aaron Rodgers. I could see him not being able to run for first downs or have poor pocket presence or whatever the case may be. But there were certain things I didn't think I would see. Poor communication with this team I didn't see. Right? Last week's pre-snap penalties, I didn't see. Wilson and Hall, two of the reasons we thought this team could be really good and be a Super Bowl contender, being worse and regressing underneath Aaron Rodgers and looking similar or even worse than they did with Zach Wilson. Those were things I didn't see. And just an ugly, pitiful offensive performance yet again. And the team starts slow and sluggish, and they make mistakes. And I understand a lot of the penalties, certainly one off the top of my head against Justin Jefferson in this game, were a little ticky-tacky. And you breathe on Justin Jefferson, you're going to get a penalty. I understand that. But still, too many penalties, too much sloppy play. A head coach who does nothing to help them, an offensive coordinator who seems lost, a game plan that's atrocious, and a Hall of Fame quarterback who not only is missing throws, but seems like him and the team are on completely different wavelengths. And then we get to the Mets, who lose a game, but still, amazingly enough, yes, Diaz blew a game. And I thought the manager did a great job bringing him in when he did. I thought in that seventh inning with two runners on against Schwarber is the exact spot I want my best pitcher. The next inning against the top of the order in the eighth inning is exactly when I want my best pitcher. That's where the game is decided. And unfortunately for the Mets, it was. In many ways. As Diaz blew the game, gave up the big triple to Stott, gave them a two-run lead, only to watch Vientos and this Met team pull off another unbelievable miracle. They are never dead. They continue to fight. And even in a loss where they lose it in the bottom of the ninth, it still just feels like, one, there's no answers in that Philadelphia bullpen for the Mets. And no matter what they do, no matter where they are, no matter what's happening in the seventh, eighth, or ninth inning, that if you get to the top of the order, if that top of the order comes up, if Lindor and Nimmo and Vientos and even Alonso, if they find themselves with the game on the line in an opportunity to play hero, this team has done it at a more consistent level than I can ever remember any team doing it. It's freaking crazy. Vientos hits a ball at his eyes in the left center field bleachers to tie the game in the top of the ninth, two outs away from losing this game. Ultimately, they do lose, but they get what they need to do. They get the split in Philadelphia with the winning game one. They still make the Phillies feel like they have no answers in their bullpen and this Met team is going nowhere. There's still this core belief that they will come through. And right now, heading home with home field advantage now, with Manaea on the mound tomorrow night, you got to feel good about how the Mets suited up for the rest of this series. 888-808-1019. That's the brief 4 o'clock recap of what we've been talking about for the first 2 hours. Now I get back to your calls as we take it till 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. We could throw in the Yankees as they play a big game tonight, a game two, after what I thought was an impressive victory in game one. And I'll briefly tell you why, even though I haven't talked about the Yankees, it is Yankee Hot Stove here in the 4 o'clock hour. Just to give the Yankees a little bit of love as they do play a big game. I thought it was a big game because all of the fears, there's two ways to look at it when the fears come out. When everything you were worried about, because we talked about it, they're better than everybody now. This is unlike any other year in the Aaron Judge, Aaron Boone era into the postseason. They're better than everybody else. They're better than the Royals. They're better than the Tigers. They're better than Cleveland. They are the best team in the American League, bar none. Doesn't mean they'll win this series or the next series or get to the World Series. It just means they're better. And so when you go into it, you think of, well, how can they beat themselves? And the fears are, well, Cole won't be ace Cole. And Judge will continue to be poor in the postseason. And they won't hit with runners in scoring position. And they'll make the big mistake with an error. And, you know, or the bullpen will blow it. And other than the bullpen blowing it, which was great in the game, every other fear came to fruition. Every other issue. They did get one big hit from Wells with runners in scoring position, but they scored all their runs with walks. Let's be honest, they didn't hit with runners in scoring position. Judge again did nothing. Cole was bad, and yet they still won. So there's two ways to look at it. You can look at it and go, well, those things are going to kill them. Well, yeah, if they continue to play like that, sure, they're not going to win. Absolutely. But you could also look at it, you know they can't always play like that, but typically when they've played teams that are better than them, when they've played the Astros specifically, or the 18 Red Sox. When you have a game like this, you lose it. You lose it. And then even at the end of the series, if you've played well in other games, at the end of it, after they lose a five-game ALDS, you'll be killing and beating yourself up for like, man, if only Cole showed up in game one, or if only they got the one big hit that blew the game open in game one. Because it cost you the series. That's a game that typically costs the Yankees the series. Instead, they still found a way to win. They still got contributions from everybody else besides Judge. Because we talk about it, the team is built on Judge, Cole, and obviously then you could also add Soto. And Soto's the only one who showed up. So two out of the three were not there. And the stool still stayed up. It didn't tip over. They won the game. They got enough from Wells. They got enough from Verdugo. And that's the other story of the game. Aaron Boone had a great game. Aaron Boone had a great game. He plays Verdugo against everybody's wishes. He plays Cabrera against a lot of people's wishes. Cabrera plays excellent defensively at first base, does get a double, and Verdugo makes a sliding catch that no way in hell Jason Dominguez makes, and he comes through with two hits, one that gets on in front of Gleyber Torres that gives him a two-run homer, and then obviously the game winner. Plus, he went to the bullpen, and guys like Clay Holmes, who nobody wants to see in a close game, and Clay Holmes comes through with an inning and two-thirds. You could argue Clay Holmes and Verdugo are the two biggest pieces of a Yankee Game 1 victory as they'll get ready for Game 2 tonight. 888-808-1019. Let's get to Paul in Buffalo. What's up, Paul?
Hey, good morning, Chris.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I tell you what, after watching Game 1 of the Mets-Phillies, the robot umpire can't come quick enough for me.
The umps have had a rough go of it here. And replay system has had a rough go of it. Let's be honest. As much as I'm a Yankee fan, I will tell you flat out, I don't know where there's an angle where Jazz Chisholm is not out at second base. And that ends up being the game-winning run. And then, you know, Turner is clearly picked off in Game 1. So, I mean, let's say the robot umps help. Right now, all the computer angles and all the camera angles and a million, if you have a half hour to look at it, they still don't get it right.
That's amazing. Yeah, what's the point of replay if you're not going to use your eyes and go with what it shows
now,
you?
Now, I typically feel like if I have to look at it 100 times, I have no problem going with the... Because to me, the replay was brought in to overturn the egregious call. So if I have to look at it in slow motion at six different angles for 10 minutes, I have no problem saying call on the field. But that's typically not how they handle it. They look at it and want to make sure they get the call 100% right. If you look at both of those plays, I don't know how you don't come away thinking Turner got picked off at first and Chisholm is out at second base. I just don't know how you don't come away with it.
I thought they were both pretty cut and dry.
Yeah.
And in the second game in the Mets-Phillies, I think it caused Mendy to not make a challenge on an early play because he lost one of his challenges the game previously.
Right.
So there's repercussions to poor umpiring.
Sure.
And, you know, Keith and Howie said that Andy Fletcher, the home plate umpire, missed 17 calls in the first game, and 11 of them went for Zach Wheeler. And as I watched the game, I said he's squeezing the Mets pitchers, and he's giving Wheeler everything. And you got to be better than that.
Yeah, I mean, listen, but I mean, I don't think you could. Well, one, they won that game. And, you know, two, I don't think you could blame. I haven't seen, now, even the Yankee game, right, where Jazz Chisholm scores the game-winning run, the game was tied. I do believe the Yankees have the overall better bullpen, and it was at Yankee Stadium. So it's not like the Yankees lose the game if that play is called an out. They weren't down. If they were down, I think the Yankee haters and the Kansas City Royal fans would have a better argument. But I still haven't seen umpiring or a game where I felt like it was the number one reason. At least I'm not thinking of something off the top of my head. Yeah, the home plate umpire game one wasn't great. It's not why the Philly lost. It's not why the Mets won. It's not. I haven't seen something that's dramatically changed the game here. Mike in Long Island. What's up, Mike?
Hey, what's going on, Chris?
What's up, buddy?
I just wanted to get your take on Mendoza's managing style. I've agreed with it pretty much the entire season. The playoffs, I feel like, you know, not substituting Vientos there. The eighth to the ninth inning, so he gets his at-bat. That made total sense. Because you got to give him a chance to hit. But I don't agree with him keeping McGillin, and I don't agree, as your screener was telling me, that Mendoza's rationale was, well, I had nobody available.
Yeah.
I don't want to lose a walk-off first and second. First of all, I wouldn't have even pitched to Harper. With Turner on first, Harper, to me, is the deadliest hitter right now the Phillies have. And you got past Schwarber. Bringing in Diaz right there, high leverage situation, I want Diaz there. I don't care if it's the seventh inning, sixth inning, whatever it takes, you can't lose the game. Diaz is your closer, mano a mano, love it.
Right.
But you can't go down with McGill on the mound. I'm sorry. McGill, to me, is not even a polished major league starter, let alone a polished high leverage reliever. He's not. There were other options there. I mean, give me a break. I'd even rather see Adam Ottavino try to get some surface sliders by him. You can't have McGill. McGill was showing that Harper nearly took him down the right field line. That would have busted the game open right there. Turner scoring. You can't go down with McGill. And you got a day off today.
I think that's the better argument. I don't know. To me, I don't know about Ottavino necessarily. I wouldn't have complained if Ottavino was there. I think you save McGill and you get once you get through all your relievers. I don't disagree with you there, but I know Maton's pitched a lot, and he was ineffective the last time. When he was ineffective and blew the game, it's because of 3 out of 4 days, whatever. But he pitched the game before, no doubt, but he had the day off before that, and then he's got a day off today. I still feel like either him or Stanek, one of them has to be available in this game. You have an opportunity, and especially with the Mets' heroics, give that offense one more chance. Give them one more opportunity. Get through the ninth. Get through that part of the order with your best relievers. And then if you want to go to McGill, okay, I'm more open to it. Get through that part of the lineup with a reliever who's done this all year for you. And then give your offense one more chance. Look what they've done. You have to allow your offense to have one more crack at it. I don't know if you can kill him for it. I get that they're exhausted. I'm not saying they're not. He knows his players better than me, especially when it comes to this stuff. And Maton just struggled the last time we all felt like he was used a lot. But you had a day off the day before game one, and now you have a day off today. I would have tried to win that game. I would have tried to win that game. I would have tried to give my offense one more opportunity. Maybe they put up four, and then you have no problem going with McGill. Like, that's how this offense has operated in these late-game situations. I agree with you. I don't love McGill on the mound there because he's not a reliever. Once you get into extra innings and you need a bulk guy, you don't want to go through everybody or, you know, you run out of relievers. I get it. Eventually, McGill has to pitch. I didn't think the ninth necessarily with the top of the order coming up is where he had to come pitch. I know he comes in the eighth. I don't, after Diaz gives up the home run, the triple, excuse me. I still don't know if I go to him there. I feel better about an actual reliever in that spot. I know, you know, they're down. It's tough. 888-808-1019. Quick break. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Got you till 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. We'll be right back with your calls.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Odell Beckham Jr. made the catch with one hand for the touchdown. Wow, what a catch by the rookie.
Ridiculous.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Yeah. You know, as they play the Odell Beckham thing there in the promo, maybe, you know, that Giants performance. To go without Neighbors, who has been, you know, their offense and the staple for Daniel Jones and just that, you know, so many targets, you know, forcing the ball. He's been so good, such a, you know, safety blanket for Daniel Jones. In this game, they go right down the field. They get to the goal line. They fumble the ball. And again, I know people are going to scream about it. If they would have lost the game, they'd be more screaming about it. It looks like it breaks the plane for me before he fumbles it. It's how it feels to me, but whatever the case may be, it's a 14-point swing. They should be up 7. They're down 7. They just went down the field with a long, sustained drive. Perfect. Without Neighbors, they get that blow, and they come right back and do it again. I thought that was it was a great game for Dable. It was a great game for Jones, who... Whatever you think of Daniel Jones, and we all know I'm not the biggest fan in the world. I think he gets way too much hate sometimes. I just don't know if he's a legitimately game-changing, franchise leading to the Super Bowl type quarterback. And I'm still not sure. In fact, I still don't think he is. But he played very well. He hit all the deep balls, which was his issue. He made me laugh during the week when he said, well, you know, two weeks ago, I threw the ball and overthrew everybody. So last week, I tried to underthrow everybody. And today, you know, the porridge was just the right temperature. And Goldilocks hit all his bears. It was really impressive because he nailed the touchdown throw down the sidelines. Like, he finally found the bed that he was comfortable in and played a really tough game. But the other thing is, you have to admit, no matter how you feel about him, the guy's tough as nails. Like, that's for certain. And I've always felt that way about him. The guy is tough. He is He's a load to bring down. He leans in with his shoulder. I mean, it's probably part of the reason he's got neck problems and a blown out knee. I mean, the guy doesn't, he just comes at you. And the coach talked about it in the post game that it rubs off on the rest of the team. There's, when your quarterback who's, you know, fighting for his job and fighting for his career and coming off a blown out knee has a neck injury and he's out there laying it on the line, dipping his shoulder. You know, he's the one who got paid already, though. You know, he's got the contract. He's got the money. And he's out there just risking everything. I got to give him. He's tough as nails. I'll give him that for sure. Eddie in Rockland. What's up, Eddie?
Hey, Chris. What's happening, man?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
Danny Terrific, man. You gave him a new nickname.
He was very good yesterday. That's for sure.
Chris. As the winds are cold and the tide turns,
mm-hmm.
the Giants are slowly becoming better than the Jets. But
they
I gave you a couple of beginning of the season. I said, you know, Aaron Rodgers to me looks a little lackadaisical.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are at week 6, and you told me you're waiting for this Super Bowl offense to show up, and you guaranteed it's going to show up. What week will this Super Bowl offense show up?
All right, ready? Here we go. Here's typical Eddie caller. I was right, and you said things you didn't say. So it's really comforting. No, when did
what
I?
What do you mean?
When did I guarantee after the last couple of weeks? When did I guarantee that the Jets offense would show up? When did I guarantee?
You said before the year is out, you were relying on the Jets.
Well, of course you're relying on the Jets offense. Of course you're relying on the Jets offense. And I don't expect it to be this bad, and he's Aaron Rodgers. But when did I ever guarantee a Super Bowl caliber offense is gonna? I guaranteed it. I love it. Like I stood up here and I said, "This is putting all my chips in." I know we've seen crap from the New York Jets offense lately, and I know Rodgers looks like crap. But I'm telling you, they're Super Bowl bound, and the Super Bowl offense will show up. I missed that part, but I certainly think it's going to be better than it was. And I certainly expected it to be more on par and more compatible and feeling like they practiced. That's the biggest thing for me is just the consistent on the wrong page, the consistency with being on the wrong page. It's every, like, it's crazy. I could see Aaron Rodgers sailing a couple throws. I could see him looking, I wouldn't use the word lackadaisical, but I think he's banged up a little bit, looking a little bit slower than he did Thursday night against the Patriots. I could see that. I could see him throwing a pick or two. I could see him not having that special ability to throw from, you know, no matter what his footwork is like or what the arm angle has to be, throwing dimes like when he was back winning MVPs. I could see all that. Throwing balls on the opposite side of the wide receiver, like the wide receiver running fly patterns and him throwing button hooks. Like, I didn't expect that. He button hooked me. I thought you were going to button hook me. I've never seen that before from Aaron Rodgers. I've never seen him miss guys off the edge and getting blindsided. I thought part of the reason that it would be a decent matchup against Minnesota is that Minnesota's defense, I don't know how talented it is. I mean, it's good. It's got good players on it. But it's really been a really well-coached. And Flores has done an incredible job, you know, throwing different looks at, like, Daniel Jones week one, who we could argue now was rusty, but still threw a bunch of different looks, blitzes, got after him, you know. And I just thought Aaron Rodgers, I was concerned about the offensive line a little bit, but you can't blitz Aaron Rodgers all day and expect to get away with it. That's his history. That's who he is. And right now, it's amazing to me how just not on the same page him and his wide receivers are. And so we can scream about the coach, and he deserves every bit of it. But his defense showed up and gave them an absolute chance to win the game. It's Hackett, it's Rodgers. That's who I'm throwing the blame at. And I do think they're talented enough to be a playoff team. Always have said that. I didn't predict the Super Bowl. I never have. I said they're an AFC championship team. That's what I've said from the beginning. They're going to play in the AFC championship game. Maybe Super Bowl contender, but I never said they're going to the Super Bowl. I believe them to be a playoff team. I still do. Because you know what? The rest of the division, I don't know what Buffalo is right now. Buffalo's coming off one of the dumber things I've ever seen done on a football field at the end of a game. In a tie game with 40 seconds left and the ball at their own 4-yard line after a good punt, they just throw three Hail Marys. I mean, it was, well, two Hail Marys and then a bad pass over the middle. Like, waste about 9 seconds of total time, clock time, make a bad punt with a decent return, and all it took was one play, and they lost on a long field goal. I've never, like, they just, they've lost two games in a row. The Dolphins are trash without Tua, and the Patriots aren't very good. So the one saving grace about this Jet team is I still think they have a chance to win the division, as ugly as it's been, because I still don't know about Buffalo, even though they look like world beaters the first two or three weeks. They got undressed by Baltimore and lost the game to the Texans and did some stupid stuff along the way to do it. Maury in Belmore. What's up, Maury?
Tonight is your night, bro.
Tonight is your night, bro.
All right, three quick
things. Let's hope tonight is Carlos Rodon's night.
Yes, let's hope. I want to talk briefly about the Giants first.
Yes.
All right, yes, our quarterback looked good.
Very
Remember,
good.
It was the win against Washington that made us lose that quarterback that is shining like a star.
Well, yes, no, as good as Daniel Jones has looked, no, he's not. He's not Daniels.
He's still not our future.
I still don't believe him to be the future. No,
he's still not handpicked by the quarterback and the GM. So what are we doing here? Can we live in mediocrity and get now number 10 instead of number 3? Can we stop winning? That's my giant rant.
Well, you can't. I mean, listen, you can't stop winning now. I mean, who knows?
Yeah. I got more. Like, I got a couple other things, Christopher. Yeah. I'm very frustrated right now. You did say that the Jets are going to come out of the AFC East and potentially go to the Super Bowl. You are all in on the Jets.
Oh, no, 100%. Well, I said they're going to be in AFC. I said they were going to be in the NFC Championship game. I'm not hiding from that fact. But, while they were struggling the last few weeks, I said at the beginning of the year I expected the offense to be dynamic. Yep. I'm not hiding from that fact. What I'm saying is he's saying last week I guaranteed that the Hall of Fame offense will be back. No, I've been frustrated with how they played. No doubt. I said they were going to be in the AFC Championship game. I stand on that. I absolutely said it. I thought the Jets were going to be dynamic. I'm not trying to run. He's making it sound like last week I told him that the offense will be back. Don't you fear. I didn't say.
Here we go. Gio, this is Yankee talk here. I need Giancarlo Stanton to say, guys, I've been the anchor. I've been holding you down. I stink. I can't run. Put the kid in the DH and let me retire. I've had enough of
him.
You see him running around the bases yesterday?
No, I saw him walking backwards, I thought.
Yeah,
around the bases.
It's a disaster. Are you kidding me? Look at the
It cost him two shit. Runs.
He can't run?
It cost him two runs. I don't know. Like, that's a good question, Maury, and thank you for the call. And tonight is your night, bro. I don't know, and that's just like a casual thing we say now. I always thought that Giancarlo Stanton is capable of running faster. Not fast, but faster. But that he's just he is a hamstring pull waiting to happen, and he is afraid to run because he doesn't want to get hurt. And I've got to say, if that's the case, if he's just hobbled and can't run, that's one thing. I'm mad about it, don't get me wrong. I'm almost impressed with his mental capacity to stick to that plan in the moments, like, because with the game on the line, how are you not busting your ass? Like, even if you're worried about a hamstring pull, how are you not busting your ass on that ground ball to third base when you have an opportunity to get a hit and give the Yankees a run? How? It's one thing in the outfield where the ball gets away. He probably didn't see it running the third. Like, that it's the single. It's the ground ball to third, the dive, the inability to get, like, if he hustled at all, he's got an RBI and a base hit. I'm almost impressed, and when I say that, I mean pissed off, that he's able to just say to himself, I don't run. I don't care what the situation is. I don't care. There could be a fire in here. I'm not running. I could be chased by the guy sharpening knives at 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm not running. Plain and simple. I won't run. Like, it's amazing to me. But yes, his legs cost him two runs directly. But he's still Giancarlo Stanton. He's still been their best postseason hitter. It's one game. Despite he hasn't been able to run like this for a year and a half, I don't ever remember it costing them the way it costed them in this game. They won the game anyway. I need his offense in there. I need his threat. I don't know what Jason Dominguez is offensively. I just don't know right now. I can't make that decision just yet. I can't.
It's Chris McMonagle with Yankeeography.
Jim in Hackettstown. What's up, Jim?
Hey, good morning, Chris. I got good two morning. Met points and two Yankee points if I yes. get to them. So the Met points, I would say, you know, if they're going to use the closer, not in the ninth inning, I would definitely highly rely on the two guys from that they got from that were on Houston, Matten and what's his name, Schwarik, or I'm not sure how you pronounce his name, but those two guys, they've been in a high pressure situation before, and I would rely on that.
Maton Stanek? Is that yeah. what you're referring to?
Yeah, the guy with the long hair, he's not yes. a closer, but the two guys, they play for Houston. So I would rely heavily on those two guys.
The Mets have, Jim. The Mets have relied on them. The manager felt like he couldn't go to them, and I disagree. I disagree. He knows his guys better than me, and the last time Maton pitched when he was tired, he had a terrible outing. So I get it. I'm not furious about it. I'm not going to stand here and stomp my feet and hold my breath and go, Mendoza's an idiot. But at the same time, they had an opportunity. I got to give my offense another chance to go score runs. It's what they've done. In these late situations, I trust my guys to go out there and find a way to put a run together. Someone to hit a big home run. Someone to come through in the clutch. I wanted that at least one inning. Get me to the 10th. Get me through the top of that Philly order one time. Give my offense a chance to score a run. And that's it. Right? I'll be able to save one of them. Throw Stanek and save Maton. Right? Maton's really the one been exhausted. Stanek looks really good. Throw Stanek. Get him through the one inning. And then if you have to go to McGill. I wanted to see the 10th inning. I wanted one more crack at it offensively. So I didn't love sticking with McGill. I didn't necessarily love McGill in that spot. The only thing I'll say is if you go to McGill after Diaz gives up the lead or blows the game, once you go to him, I do admit now I'm afraid to take him out of the game because I need him for length. And if I get into an extra inning game, I guess you know you can't think too far down the line, but he's my length guy if I get to that spot. So I could understand the trepidation of once I went to him, now do I really want to pull him and then go to the bullpen that's A, tired, and then B, the bottom of the barrel. But for me, I needed to see the 10th. Let's get to Dave in Port Jefferson. What's up, Dave?
Chris, good morning, man.
Good morning, sir.
Question.
How are you?
All right. Diaz comes in, gets Schwarber. We're up one. Next yes. inning, he gets Turner. Why are we walking Harper? Worst case, he hits it out, we're tied. Mm-hmm. Why are we pitching around him with how deep Philly's lineup is? Obviously, Castellanos was on fire last night. He gets on, and then I believe Stott drove him in with the triple.
Right.
I just don't. I don't like that move, man.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I have to go. Did you feel his complete pitch around? Yeah, I guess. I mean, he is Harper. I mean, he's the guy who scares you the most. You're up one. You feel like you can get around it. Castillo's not been as good. He comes through in this game with a single there. He comes through with the game winner. Listen, I have no problem being careful to Harper. It's one of those things, you make a good pitch and then you go attack him if you get ahead or he takes a bad swing. Diaz is also so erratic that I can't just say confidently that he 100% pitched around him. They come out. I got to remember that inning. Did they talk to him right before that at bat?
Yeah, they talked to him. He strikes out the first batter.
Right, right.
And he looks dominant. And then he throws essentially four pitches just off the plate.
Yeah. I mean, there's a difference between pitching around not wanting to come in right with your fastball against Harper, who did hit a 99-mile-an-hour fastball from Severino 434 feet or whatever it was. So, like, I don't mind not letting Harper beat me. I don't mind it. I don't like putting the tying run on either. But I certainly don't mind, you know, making sure Harper isn't the guy who beats me. Because once I get past Schwarber, Harper's the guy who takes you deep. Castellanos hit a home run in this game, too, and he comes through with another two hits, a hit in that spot before the Stott triple. But here's the thing. Don't give up a triple to Stott. I know we're worried about walking Harper. If he gets the next two guys out, it's not a big deal. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. Quick break. Come back and take as many phone calls as we can before 5. Apparently here on Yankee Hot Stove.
One caller. It's BT and Sal.
One guy asked me a Yankee comment.
I didn't bring it up. 101.9 FM.
talk New York sports on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
So with the Jets offense performing the way it did yesterday, obviously with all the Devontae Adams noise about possibly trading for him, that's only going to get ratcheted up. I understand that. And, you know, I mentioned that I had a concern prior to this year and prior to this most recent, you know, turn of events with him demanding a trade and all the issues that are happening out in Vegas. And I was hesitant to bring him in because I was concerned about the relationship with Rodgers and Garrett Wilson. And I wanted him to build the relationship he has with Devontae Adams with Garrett Wilson, because I don't know if he would ever be as good as Devontae Adams was necessarily with him, but I believe that's the kind of ability, or close to it, that Garrett Wilson has shown over the first couple of years of his career. And while, I mean, I'm for it now because the relationship between them has not even come close to blossoming. And I know I'm saying that off of the real first time that they even came close to it. The first half, it felt like they were forcing it to him, which is fine. You should be forcing it to your best wide receiver. And this is the game where he finally comes through and he's got 13 receptions for 101 yards and a touchdown. I still don't like what I see. Despite those numbers, despite the 13 catches, and despite 101 receiving yards and a touchdown, he had 22 targets. 22 targets. That's 9 incompletions to Garrett Wilson. 9. I still saw a lot of poor communication between the two of them and not being on the same page. I don't understand it. Even in that kind of performance, I didn't love it. I didn't love it. And that's why I don't know if Devontae Adams will even help this situation right now. Sure, it gives him another wide receiver you can trust more than Lazard, who still's got the drops occasionally. Did get had a couple here and a touchdown in this game. But, and seems to be the go-to guy, because they, on some level, at least they are on the same page more than others. But you're starting to get Conklin more involved, 6 catches, 55 yards. But ultimately, this has to be, you know, Garrett Wilson has to be the guy. And although he was in this game, I still see too much. Too much bad, too much inconsistency, too much not being on the same page, too much, you know, Rodgers looking confused. The camera pans back to Rodgers and he's like befuddled and dumbfounded at which way Wilson cut and where the ball went. Like, it's just too much. And maybe Devontae Adams coming in now, maybe I had it wrong. Maybe Devontae Adams coming in, now it would have to be a long-term thing. They'd have to rip up his contract and give him something new. But maybe that relationship can actually help Wilson and Rodgers' relationship. Maybe it can help. Because I'm shocked at where it is 5 weeks in. I'm shocked. It's one of the more, of all the things that have gone wrong with this offense, the offensive line not being able to keep Aaron Rodgers up, clearly the most impactful. But the most surprising, the one I'm really having a trouble with, is the relationship between Rodgers and his receivers, specifically Wilson. That one I don't understand. I can understand the offensive line not being very good. I can understand Rodgers being 40 and screaming in pain 2 out of the last 3 weeks or whatever. Like, that I get. That I can understand. That I could have foreseen. The miscommunication over and over and over again. The problems with the pre-snap penalties last week. Like, those things I did not see coming. These are things I thought that would have been ironed out. He did have camp last year. He has been around the team. Now he's got all of this year. I know he went to Egypt. I'm not putting a bunch of stuff on that either. It's a couple days. This is week 5. He could have missed all of training camp. By week 5, they should be on the same page. It's his offense. It's him and Nathaniel Hackett have done this before. Like, what's going on? Why is this so hard to get? Doug in Long Island. What's up, Doug?
Hey, what's up, Nick? How you doing?
What's going on? Did you say, never mind, doesn't matter. Chris here, how are you? Just to be sure.
Look, I'm in my mid-50s. I mean, this team, I'm running out of superlatives for this team. I remember going down 86 to parade down by Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
It's just unbelievable. My question is, Mendoza, think he's been great. What do you think about putting the corner in for Iglesias? Iglesias swinging at the first pitch every time. He looks a little off. Maybe a little recency bias there, but maybe sit him down for a game.
Yeah, I totally disagree with you. I think Iglesias has been terrific for this team. Terrific. His ability to just put the ball in play, the infield singles. Again, in this game, he gets, you know, he tests the third baseman who's coming in for Bohm, who was benched because of offensive reasons, and immediately ball's thrown away. He's standing in second base. His speed, I know Acuna can bring some speed too, but his ability to beat out infield singles, his clutch ability, you know, he's coming off a 20-plus game hit streak. I mean, like, recency bias, yeah, recency bias. Acuna did a great job with Lindor hurt, and he provides something maybe off the bench. Defensively, obviously, they've used him. I could see, you know, pinch running and stuff like that, but no, I am not messing with Iglesias. I think one of the bigger positives, and this is probably unfair to Jeff McNeil, I think one of the bigger positives was the McNeil injury because it eliminated a question mark. It eliminated a situation that needed to be handled. It eliminated figuring out what it was every day. Iglesias is your second baseman. That's it. Conversation over. I'm not taking him out for anybody. So, no. No, 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 no. He's the heart and soul of the freaking team. He's been incredible for them. I am not taking him out for anybody. He is my second baseman every single day the rest of the way, as long as he's healthy. That's it. He's been great. He's been great. And again, the whole OMG thing, like, it's all part of it. It's, if you bench him for Acuna, like, you're sending the wrong message. And that's kind of like when I talked about the Senga thing. The reason I didn't like Kodai Senga starting game one, I know it's old news now, they won the game, but what I didn't like about it was he wasn't a part of this. It's not fair. I know he's been around the team. He's part of the team. He went into the season as their closer, but he's pitched one game this year. And so much of this Mets season, so much of it has been based on what you get, what you earn, and holding guys accountable. And if you're not good, you don't play. And if you don't pitch, you're in the bullpen. And if you're not good there, you're off the team. You don't conduct yourself in a manner I find acceptable, and then you tell me you don't care that I don't find it acceptable, like Lopez, you're gone. That's what it's been. Like, so much of it has been you get what you earned. Iglesias earned to be the second baseman. And I felt like Peterson or McGill earned to make that start. And I felt like Senga didn't. Not by any fault of his own, but he just hasn't been a part of this. I made the reference, it was like, because I did a show Saturday, I felt like it was the movie Miracle, where Herb Brooks at the last minute brings in like a college hotshot to throw a monkey wrench in the works and make the guys like all nervous. Like, we're family. We're family. And I know Senga's part of the family, but that's old news. And he'll probably be the starter. And he didn't do a bad job after getting touched up for a home run by Schwarber after the first pitch. But he will probably be the Game 5 starter if they even need one, this Met team. Unbelievable. All right, that's it for me. The warm-up show is next. Thank you guys for calling. Thank you for listening. Rami on the other side, always appreciate it. He's in there laying Gio's voice over Gio's voice for no other reason than try to impress somebody. I don't know, not me. His own amusement. All right, well, I'll catch you again tomorrow, 2 a.m. after the Yankee game. Let's go, Yankees. Need a big win. Mets with a day off. And I'm sure you'll enjoy the rest of your day yelling about the football. Bye-bye.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.